The only time I ever come up with an original idea, and like people might not agree with me, but you know what? Honestly, the only way you come up with an original idea, and the only way I come up with original idea, and this isn't mine, this is, I'm just passing this on, is it has to affect you emotionally. Because all the other shit is just ideas. It's just out there. It's just stuff you saw. It's copies and carbon copies and bullshit. But when you have an emotional response, it provokes something in you that makes you think differently than you do. And you have an interpretation of something. All of a sudden, you see it under a different light. And no one showed you that. You had to have an emotional trigger hit you. Something had to spark. And then all of a sudden, this thing that you might have even looked at it 1,000 times, all of a sudden, you see it differently. And all of a sudden, it makes sense.
This is Way of the Artist with Brandon Colby Cook and Evan Schulte.
Exploring the challenges of the creative call
so that you can claim your own path
and make your life a work of art.
Time to record, Evan. Time to tell people what it's about. We don't know what it's about. That's the thing. This is a not so serious podcast recording, which means that Evan and I are starting with you as opposed to before you. Often what we do is we have a conversation. We're like, what's going on in your life? I don't know. This is going on, or something's up usually. And then we're like working through it and we come up with a topic and that's how we get into it. But instead of doing that, these types of episodes are about, well, let's find it in the process of it. And I'm going to speak for Evan. Because I know this about Evan. Because we've talked about it already. Evan and I, a big thing of artistry is actually just starting. Just begin. You don't always know what you're going to do. You don't know what's going to happen. But you got to have some faith and some trust in the fact that if you just begin, something good will happen. And often I think, you know, we actually have a podcast on this. Is You Know More Than You Think You Do, which is one that's worth checking out. If you think, oh, I don't have any ideas, maybe go back in, you know, maybe 10 or 20 episodes and find that one. That would be a good one to start with. But, you know, I often find for me, I actually do have something. I might not be able to put words to it yet, and I haven't really articulated it, and I haven't even totally thought it out yet, but like there's some inclination, some inspiration. And I know right now that there's a few things that are bubbling and percolating underneath right now. And I'm like, I don't even know how to describe this yet, but they're happening. And we've already started recording. So they're going to probably surface at some point in this conversation, which will be interesting. And who knows how the context of this is going to go. But anyway, that's what this is about. So if it's your first episode, you know what's up. It's not always like this. It's actually more rare, but you get to join us for the process. And I'm Brandon, and now here is Evan.
That was so well spoken, and then it got a little clunky at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's all right. That's how it goes. A lot of the things that you said, and it's interesting because I feel like we always sort of, whenever we do one of these episodes, we always just sort of throw it out there. We kind of give the introduction every single time, although it's always in a bit of a new way that we give the intro of like, okay, yeah, this is what we're doing with these types of episodes. And there's always something different, like the way it comes out every single time often just sort of sparks a new thing for me. And, you know, very much it's part of, I think, just like there's something so purely creative about it. And I think one of the reasons why that is because when you come into something without really any expectation, just complete openness, which also means you have to pay just complete attention to what's going on from moment to moment to moment. And when you're doing that thing, very often all of these other things that have been percolating inside you, you know, whether, you know, that's in your subconscious or in your gut or your heart or wherever it might be coming from. Those things just, it's like you've given them space. You've given them the floor to actually just like poke up because you've gotten quiet. You know, like the mind can become, when the mind can become quiet, then something new can present itself, right? Because as we've mentioned many times on this podcast, you know, the mind and thinking, particularly the process of thinking, is not really capable of coming up with new things. Thinking is very much based on the past, is based on things that we already know. But in order to have new things to think about, you need to actually just have something new be brought to you, right? There's a new experience, there's a new something, and that gives your mind something else. But the mind is not actually capable of coming up with just new stuff on its own. It just recycles, yeah. Right? And so, you know, that's why I think this something like this and doing these types of episodes, and even in a broader respect, entering into just trying something, like you said, just beginning something and without knowing, right, is in some ways that's the best thing that you can do, no matter what you're approaching, right? Like for us, all we have really is, well, we do this podcast and it's generally about these things. Okay. Like we do have some kind of guiding influence on what's happening, but you can bring that to, you know, if you're a painter, it's just like, okay, well, I don't know. I'm showing up to the canvas and I don't actually know what I'm going to paint. Mm-hmm. I have no thought or idea. It's like, okay, well, just begin, mm-hmm. see what happens. And then just be in that interaction, that relationship with the art that you're involved with. Mm-hmm. Right. And it will start to speak to you and you start to have a dialogue with it, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Right. And that dictates where you go. And maybe it takes you, maybe something extraordinary comes out of it, or maybe something not very extraordinary comes out of it, but something will come out of it, right? And whether it's art or not, I mean, that's always a subjective thing, right? So, yeah, I don't know. Those are just some of the thoughts that were going on for me and with your introduction.
Something that came up for me while you were talking was, like the cost. It was a conversation I was having with someone 2 or 3 days ago, and we were talking about cost and how cost. So first of all, let me start by saying that this conversation is we're looking at creativity right now. We're looking at just starting, and people assume that there's like this kind of wasting of time, and that's the cost. And I think that's the wrong way to look at it. I think you need to look at it as an investment. And I don't think that you as an artist, if you're going to be creative, the whole concept of wasted time needs to go out the window. I think that's like probably, I would say a tenet. I'd say it might even be the most important thing of all. Because if you think you're just going to show up, spit gold, and walk away, it's not going to happen. Although every once in a while, it might. And those are pretty cool moments. But most of the time, it's not quite that. It's more, you know, you try something and you work it. Case in point, I'm working on this story right now. And one of the characters, she was the character's wife in the first early drafts of the story. And as it evolved and as I worked through it, it became... through the whole process, it makes more sense as his sister. And then I was like, yeah, they're like this brother and sister and they're like best friends and they're different in this way, but they kind of work together. And then this, the wife and him had a son, and the part of the storyline is that him and the wife are splitting or they're in trouble or whatever. And then the most recent draft, it was like, the wife is so irrelevant in this story now, like the character of the wife who kind of became the sister, and the wife became someone that was evident, but not really as predominant because the social dynamics of the story and just the way it works better as a sister. Anyway, so they had a son, and initially in the early drafts, the son was like 9 or 8 years old. And now the son's like twice the age, is like 16. And it just makes way more sense to have him be kind of this defiant teenager and struggling with the split of the parents, and then the sister's kind of related, but you know, she's there as kind of this aunt. Anyway, the story isn't even about this family, really. They're just the family that happen to be the characters in the story of a much bigger story. And I could be talking about any story. These are just the character dynamic situation relationship, and they dramatically alter and change the story in a monumentally better way. I don't know how to explain it other than this is the thing. All that time spending developing the wife character and the son and all of that stuff and this family dynamic is one way was not a waste of time. That's what got me here. Had I not done that work, there's no way I would have come to this point. It just wouldn't have happened. And there, what's interesting, I'm writing this story, right? So what's interesting about this as a writer is I've now grown up with these characters. I got to see this kid when he was 9 years old. Now he's 16, but I know what he's like at a 9 year old. As a 9 year old, that's not a waste of time. That's useful information. I got to live in that experience of his parents fighting when he was 9 years old and his dad not around and certain things like that. And what was it like for this kid and their struggles? And now he's 16 and they're split up. But that creative lived experience is still real. It's still in me and it's informing what I do next. So this is a big thing I was saying, like cost, right? That's why it came up. It's like, no, that was an investment. That was an investment in character development. One thing, Evan, too, I'll just, before I pass it on to you, you said this comment to me. I don't know if you heard it somewhere else initially, but when you said it to me, it changed the way I looked at writing. And I remember I showed you a draft of some piece of crap I wrote years ago, and I was still figuring things out, but I there were good moments in it. It did have some qualities. And I remember you said, these characters, they feel lived in. And I remember thinking, I got to double down on that idea. That's because that's where this story comes alive. And it was true, man. I mean, that was one piece of advice. Like, you didn't even give me it as a piece of advice. You gave it as positive feedback, but I took it as, hey, obviously this lived in thing, this thing of like living with these characters and making them real was holding this piece of shit story up a little bit better. You know, not to say it was a piece of shit. It's not really accurate, but the thing is I didn't have the story prowess that I have now. Like, I didn't have the structural prowess and the ability to build tension and suspense and emotional depth like I do now. But I had these characters and they did a lot of the heavy lifting for me. So even though I didn't know what I was doing as well, the characters were lived in enough to kind of do some of it for me. And so I realized that by developing characters and quote unquote wasting time, I was actually doing a lot of the work for myself. And then I have to be so creative and crafty in how I came up with suspenseful, thrilling, emotional moments, you know, because the characters, you care about them and they do that for you. So yeah, anyway, that was the thought that I had.
No, that's great. It's really about, like, there's no wasted time if you're spending time on the thing that matters with real heart and with real consideration for it. Like, there's no wasted time. You know, you might not walk away with, you know, a page full of, you know, ideas from it, but there's an inertia to that. Mm-hmm. To take a word from our last podcast, there's a creative inertia to doing that. And it opens up avenues where you would have never had them before. You know, so it's like sometimes it's those sort of experiments or those that the time put into considering these different things or having to scrap some idea that you had before. I mean, that's all like that. It wouldn't have happened had you not spent that time, mm-hmm. right? It wouldn't have occurred. So sometimes it's about like setting up that next session, you know, that you're spending on something, right? Like that's not a waste. None of it is a waste. And so, yeah, that way of thinking about it, I think is just, you know, mistaken, mm-hmm. you know, it's mistaken because yeah, any time that you spend looking at the thing is good. And there's something else. There's something else in what you were talking about there. Oh, the lived-in thing. Yeah, the lived-in comment. You know, like to me, that's one of the, especially with storytelling and acting and writing, like lived-in is maybe one of the highest compliments, I think, that you can pay a work in that regard, because it implies that there's an honesty and a truthfulness. There is a thoughtfulness. There's heart. Like, there's so much to me that's contained within that statement of like, this feels really lived in, right? Because I'm pulled in to these people. They feel real to me, or this world feels very real to me. And as an audience to that, like, I'm always appreciative of that, because it helps me go on that along on a journey. And what that got me thinking about was something that my acting teacher, Larry Silverberg, used to talk to us about, you know, as actors, and how as actors, you get in touch with things that, how do you get in touch with, I don't want to say emotions, because that's one of like the biggest sort of fallacies for actors is like when you start thinking that your job is about going for an emotional result, you're dead in the water. But it's in terms of accessing that truthfulness, right? And that real sense of what's happening has meaning, real meaning to these characters and stuff. And he would say that your way in is through specificity, right? Like, it was through getting to something specific. And that doesn't mean, because like it's, and I want to flesh that out a little bit more, because in my younger years, I would have heard that, just what I said now, and been like, okay, yeah, I've got to write down all these little details and da 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 da. And it's like, well, that can be a useful exercise. But again, none of all these little details mean anything unless it does something to you.
Yeah.
Right. And that was something from one of our teachers, Ted Whittall.
Yeah.
I remember him making this comment about specificity and being specific. And he said, if it does something to you, it's specific, or you're getting to that place of specificity. And I remember actually, because I'd heard that from Ted before I had worked with Larry. And when he was talking about that, I was just in an off moment where we were taking a break. I had mentioned that to Larry. I said, oh yeah, I had a teacher who said this to me. And he was like, that's really good. And then when everyone came back from the break, he just said like, hey, like, here's a way to think about, how do you know when you're getting specific? And it's when it's doing something to you, which was a very much a big part of my message to actors, but even just to artists in general, because it's like, it's about something happening to you that is out of your control, right? And creating the foundation for how do you do that? To me, that's what craft's about. Craft is about, how do you create the foundation for the spontaneous thing that's happening to you to occur, right? To me, that's how I kind of, in a very broad stroke, view what being an artist and how and what that process is like. But anyhow, the specificity. Was there, I feel like there was something else that was there. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. While you're kind of clarifying that for yourself, I had a thought, you know, with writing, there's so much of what you're saying that's so true here, because there's characters and you develop them out of utility. And it's like, I need a bad guy. So, or whatever I need, you know, or like betrayal happens or whatever, like whatever you're trying to do. I mean, sometimes, you know, you don't like, it doesn't work always like that. It's like, you know, or he has a wife he has a trouble with. And so the wife is it's a utility. It's like an idea. It's a relationship just to help the story have a personal element. But like, the character is nothing more than just like, it's just a utility in the story. But that created a foundation for the sister to be born out of and the son to be developed out of, you know. And there's a character, I was just thinking about this in the script that I'm working on. I'm working on a few, but there's this character who initially he was the antagonist in the story. And then I was like, I got to make a twist and I got to make this more interesting. It's too obvious. Like, I would go to sleep at night after I was working this story. I was like, you know, the story's good. It's got legs, but it's just, it's too on the nose. Like, it's just going down this line. I can predict what's going to happen. And I don't like that. I kept going to sleep being like, hey, twist. How can I turn it? Twist it. So then I started to realize that the character who I initially developed as the antagonist was a red herring. And now that character has become kind of an ally to the main character who helps them, and they're absolutely essential to them accomplishing the bigger thing that's going on that we as an audience don't see as happening, because this character is so great at misleading us down this path that even the audience, we think they're the bad guy, and then we realize they're gray. They're not good or bad in the sense like, you know, whatever, but you begin to see there's more to them. But I was working on that character today because I'm like, I need to do a little bit more development on them. And I was really like getting behind why they are the way they are. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, this could be the main character. Not that I'm going to move it into that, but I got so into the boots of what it is to be this person. And it's like, fucking yeah, they're exactly like this. I would be like that too. And this totally makes sense. And actually there's a whole great story right here. And I'm like, okay, hold on. Let's come back. Do we want to do this story, or are we sticking with the narrative that we've been developing? And I was like, no, it's the narrative we've been developing, but it doesn't mean that this character couldn't have, like, this character could have their own movie, right? And that's the thing about like lived in, you kind of like end up getting there. But my point is that, yeah, the utility of creating a foundation in which I can have an experience, something can hit me. And that's what happened to me with this character. The utility of them were there. And today I got in their boots and walked around for a moment what their life is like, and I got their point of view and I got their opinion, and it's totally helping the story in a monumental way. Like, I've used that word again, but it's really true. But it's like the whole utility of the character, that's all kind of like, if that's where you leave it, that's where your story is going to die too. It's born and dies all in that same spot. Yeah. But when it hits you, then you know you're onto something. Now you know you got legs. Now something begins to happen.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful illustration of sort of where I was where I was going with it, which is, you know, just you describing that and talking about that process that you're having with this character. Like, you were visibly and audibly through it, I'm sure, to anyone listening, like, there is an excitement that was coming from you. This direction for this character did something to you that was out of your control, right? Because you're having an emotional response to it, right? A visceral, physiological, emotional response to these potentials and these options and things like that, right? And that's where we need to go as creative people and as artists. I think too often we just, you know, the whole, okay, what's the utility of this? Well, that's just the thinking part, yeah. Right? And not that there's not, that's not important to figure out and to a certain degree, but you need to go further than that, right? Because, and when you go, oh, I have to work on this character a little bit, right? Well, what does that mean? That means this character isn't doing enough to you yet. You know, as the person who's writing this and creating this character, it's like, okay, I need to spend some more time, because right now it's just like, yeah, they're this function, but they need to do something to me,
yeah.
You know, and that's how we need to really gauge the directions that we go with things. I think that, because here's the thing, that utility function attitude in creation is, the problem with that is that that's just an idea about something. And very often also when we're thinking about, oh, emotional impact on the audience, right? To a certain extent, you don't know necessarily what that is, right? You say, oh, well, if we do this, it will have this emotional impact. It's like, well, you actually don't know that. Mm-hmm. It's just an idea that you have that it will, and maybe it would, mm-hmm. but you actually don't know. It's just an idea, right, of what you think will happen. The best gauge of what's going to have an effect on the audience is, again, what does it do to you, right? Because if it's doing something to you, you're in contact with an emotional reality, right? Because it's, yeah. it's, I'll hand it off to you in a second. But the thing is like, are you going to go off of just a cerebral idea that this is going to have this emotional impact on somebody, even though it's not doing anything necessarily to you? Or are you going to go with the thing that's actually having an emotional impact on you? Right. And it's like, it seems when you put it that way, it's like the choice is so obvious. Yeah. You got to go with the choice that's doing something to you as the creator of it, if you're going to have any chance of it having any impact on the audience.
Well, Evan, I got so caught up in what you're saying, I kind of forget what I was about to say. But, you know, one thing, I'll just, maybe I can find my way back to it. But one thing I still remember is that you are the first audience member of everything. And you need to honor that. Like, I think one thing that all artists can do, or anybody who wants to be creative, is just remember there's always two of you always at the same time. It seems like there's one, but it's actually two, because there's always the you watching you. You know, there's always, it's always there. Like whenever you, like, if you, like, I talk about this on the podcast every now and then, because I'm like, you know, I believe in being a good person. I think it's important, but you will always face yourself in the mirror at the end of the day. And who is the person that's looking in the mirror, seeing the person in the mirror? Like, it's not the same person in the mirror in a way. It's another person. And there's like a part of you that knows right and wrong and good and bad. And then there's another part of you that talks yourself out of living up to it sometimes. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing about humanity, and ugly thing too, but it's there, right? And something that, oh man, what the hell was it? Well, okay, another one, these thoughts, because there's so many. We've talked about this on the podcast before. Process and progress. Going back to this wasted time thing. If you only mark success based on progress, you've messed up. Because it's not always about progress, it's about process and the kind of whole idea that something has a function is not relevant, and you don't always know if it has a function or not. You haven't figured it out. Here's the thought I had, Evan. Finally, it came back around. Most of your ideas are shit. Your ideas are shit because they're actually just copies of things that you've seen, and like, they're just carbon copies. Like, you think you have an original idea? You don't. I can promise you this, man. Like, I've been in the film industry for 25 years, and I spend like the last week, I've spent probably about 4 or 5 hours every morning writing. And I can tell you this, like, the only time I ever come up with an original idea, and like, people might not agree with me, but you know what? Honestly, the only way you come up with an original idea, and the only way I come up with original idea, and this isn't mine, this is, I'm just passing this on, is it has to affect you emotionally, because all the other shit is just ideas. It's just out there. It's just stuff you saw. It's copies and carbon copies and bullshit. But when you have an emotional response, it provokes something in you that makes you think differently than you do. And you have an interpretation of something. All of a sudden you see it under a different light, and no one showed you that. You had to have an emotional trigger hit you. Something had to spark. And then all of a sudden, this thing that you might have even looked at it 1,000 times, all of a sudden you see it differently, and all of a sudden it makes sense. And that's what happened to me with this character this morning, for example. I walked around in their boots, and I lived in their situation for a moment, and I felt what that would be like, and I thought about what they were doing, and it was like, I agree with that. And then I got like lit up about it. And then all of a sudden, like, things about them came in, and I think this character's coming to life. I think something really cool is happening. I think something like original is being born, or at least in the sense that it's an original take on something that could be quite obvious and cliche and on the nose. So yeah, those are a few thoughts that popped up, but I'm going to pass it on to you, because really, Evan, honestly, that's about all I have to say about that in this moment.
Well, it's like, you know, when you get to the point where suddenly these things start to have a life of its own, and you know, just, it's an interesting road maybe to go down with this thing about original ideas, and because that can be tricky, because I think you could have an original idea that isn't necessarily new, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, like where it's, you know, we'll just, because we're using sort of like script writing and screenwriting as an example, we'll stay with that. where it's, and you might have an idea for this character and taking in a direction, which is like, okay, well, but that's, you know, something like that has been done before, but there's something about the honesty in which it is now injected itself into the story, that there's something about the honesty of what you're creating and originality, I think, where it's like, okay, it's not necessarily like, whoa, no one's ever seen something like this before, but there's a quality to an honesty and bringing a life to this character that it comes with this sense of this is fresh. There's something, because there's something real, because this thing has a life of its own, it feels kind of unpredictable and wild. And that's something that I think we're looking for in art, you know, is there is something wild about it. Like where there's something that, again, because of that whole thing, well, it's doing something to us that's not in our control, right? You know, like a really great character in a movie or something. Like we were talking about this a few weeks ago. We were talking about Bloodline, the TV show, the Netflix show, Bloodline or Bloodlines?
Bloodline.
Just Bloodline, right. And especially that first season and the villain, antagonist in that character, this brother, you know, he like, I mean, well-written show first and foremost, like that's, but then the actor, I'm trying to remember his name. His last name starts with an M, Australian actor. Anyhow, he's Mendelsohn, something Mendelsohn. Anyhow, he's an incredible actor. And he makes you feel so uncomfortable whenever you see him on screen, or something like Homelander in The Boys. Like he comes on screen and you're just, and as an audience, you just go, oh God, because you don't know what's going to happen. Like you're just like, what is this person doing? And that is a marriage between the writer and the actor, like really come together in a beautiful way when that, and it's terrific when it happens. But part of the thing is that, yeah, like this has a life of its own. This, what we're seeing, we're not in control of as an audience, and we feel like we're out of control of the situation. And it both kind of scares us, but it's also really exciting and titillating, if I may use that word. But it's there's always that element, I think, in great art, is that it also takes us to a place where we're not in control. And there's a translation of that from the artist to audience, I think, where it's, and again, going back to my teacher, Larry, he would say, I might not be saying this in his exact wording, but he would tell us, if you don't know what's going to happen next, the audience doesn't know what's going to happen next. Right, just as an actor, and which was reiterating a sort of a philosophical idea about acting and performance, which is a big one for actors to overcome, because you have this script, you have these lines, you actually do know what's going to happen in this story, and yet you have to show up to perform it as if it's the first time. Mm-hmm. You have to show up with the attitude of, I don't know what's going to happen. Because in a way, you actually don't. You actually don't know from a moment-to-moment basis with your scene partners or whatever. You actually don't know what's going to happen, right? Despite however many rehearsals and performances you've done, something new can happen. Or you might discover something new in the midst of the performance that actually brings you deeper into it, right? Makes you more lived in to the character and the story, and you've got to be open to those things. But anyhow, this is all to say that quality of, okay, I don't know what's going to happen, and that level of attention and walking that tightrope so to speak, is when you're in that place, the audience, there's a good chance that they're in that place with you. And why wouldn't they? Mm-hmm. Right? Why would they not be in that place with you? Because that energy is there. I don't know how to describe it, but I know it's because I've felt it. I've experienced it where I've felt myself on the tightrope with the audience, where we're just like, holy shit, what is about to happen next? How are the words that I'm supposed to say next? How are these even going to come out right now? I don't know, right? But I'm just on this ride, and they come out, and they come out in a way that's surprising and unexpected, but more honest than I've maybe ever said them before. And it's just like, I just gave myself chills right now. And it's because that whole experience is there, and man, it's wild, and it's a ride, and it's I think part of what we're also looking to have as an audience as well. Hey everybody, this is Evan, and this episode is brought to you by my book. Yes, I recently released a book called The Actor's Awakening, Connecting Spirituality to Craft. Expand yourself as an actor and your craft through a spiritual perspective. Take a journey that will explore universal philosophies and insights to help you understand human nature in a profound way, and develop practices to take your work to another level. Again, that's The Actor's Awakening, Connecting Spirituality to Craft, available on Kindle and paperback on Amazon. And as always, if you like the show, please subscribe.
This conversation is interesting. Like, I mean, I know we've been talking a lot about storytelling and all of that. I want to say this just before we move on, because I just want to go back just for one sec. I might have said earlier, I don't know how I phrase it, but like, all your ideas are shit. I think that's a more of a practical, tactical way of looking at ideas as opposed to like actual fact. I think you might have good ideas. You might have things that actually come up that are actually good ideas. I'm not really saying that we don't have any ideas that are good. It's kind of like, but if you filter them through the filter of like, this is probably a shitty idea, you know? And so if I, you know, if I don't think my idea is good, then I won't let it just kind of exist unchecked. And I think that's kind of what I was kind of saying, is like, unchecked ideas are a dangerous game to play as especially as a storyteller. 'Cause like, look, so many movies get made and so many things kind of get done the same way. And especially if you're making movies and writing screenplays, you have such a high demand on you to find what's new and novel. Because movies that are just kind of like everything else, they tend not to get made, and they tend not to get any buzz or interest when they do get made. And so there's a huge cost of not having any novelty to your film. So in that respect, I think it is really important to like check your ideas and like basically don't assume that they are somehow, don't assume that you have this divine idea. You might, maybe you do, but don't assume it is. Like, assume it isn't, and that's a safer choice. And if you kind of discover, oh, this was genius, I came up with that, like, how did I do that? But that's also a thing. I think when you come up with a genius idea, a lot of the time you don't know it. One of the things I've also noticed, Evan, is that I've worked with a lot of screenwriters, helped a lot of people write scripts. I've helped a lot of people write their first screenplay ever. And one common thing I will say that I've noticed with, especially for like new screenwriters, is when you get into flow, you start having these ideas and things start working, you think you're a genius. You think you're so good. And you're like, oh, it's so good. It's so good. And I know this feeling. I've had the same feeling. And then you look back at it later and you're like, this was so bad. What was I thinking? You know? And there's also this alternative, and writers will talk about this. You think you're writing absolute garbage that day. And you're like, I shouldn't even bother. I should stop writing. I should deliver mail or something. I should work as a janitor. Like, I don't care, but I am not meant to be a writer. And you like, people are like, holy shit, this is great. You know, I remember I was co-writing with someone, and we used to pass scenes back and forth as we were trying to develop this thing. And, you know, they'd write a scene, I'd write a scene, we toss them back and forth. And then they one week, I just remember this week, they handed me two scenes. so perfect that it was two scenes. And they go, this one, I'm really confident with. This one's good. I think we're going to love this. This one I'm not sure about. So I really just kind of wanted to get your feedback, get your thoughts or whatever. The first one they showed me that they thought was so great, I was like, this is boring. The second one they sent me, I was like, this is awesome. I'm like, they were like, and it was the one they didn't like. And, it, you know, and the one that made the film that we actually did was the one they didn't like. And the other one, I don't even know if it ever got filmed. I think it got tossed in a file and it just never got done, which I think is incredible to, because, and here's my theory on why that happened. The scene that they liked had, it looked like other movies. It looked like other things that worked before. And so they kind of, I think they had a confidence in it, in the sense of false confidence, that it was good because it looked like what was good. The other one was more emotional. It had character depth. It had character vulnerabilities, which is all the reasons why it felt so good and read so well. But they, I think they accidentally shared some vulnerability. And I think that's why they didn't like it, because it's so hard to share sometimes the inner part of ourselves.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Yeah. That's really interesting. And I was thinking something along those lines too. It's like, yeah, what, you know, and it's, I think you're probably onto something there, where it's like, yeah, that first scene was in the realm of where the person felt they were in control, right?
Yeah.
I'm in control of the scene. I know what's happening. I know where it's going. But part of the problem, or the trap, that not necessarily, because you can have a good feeling and it actually is really good. You know, there's, yeah. That's just the way it goes. You know, it's only kind of sometimes upon reflection that you can actually see what something is. You just kind of got to go. You do it, and then you sort of see what the fallout is afterwards. But yeah, there's, I think what can happen is, yeah, there's that thing of control where it's just like, ah, yes, like, and it's, you know, we're essentially, there's been too much head and not enough heart in it. And so the head feels very satisfied because, like, I've accomplished, I've checked all of the boxes of what needs to happen in here. I feel good about it. But then you're going to see, yeah, but there's just sort of, it all feels kind of like something I've seen before. It all feels, because that, again, is all that thinking can do. It can just do what it already knows, right? So it can only come up with things that are contrived at some level. Whereas the scene that the person was like, I'm not so sure about this one, what it probably had was, there was something real and honest about it. As you're saying, like, there was something vulnerable that was maybe in it. And that gave them, you know, a little bit of pause, a little bit of doubt. And not to say that the scene was perfect, but there was something lived in, in that second scene.
They were living it.
And as a result, there was something more compelling about it. There's something far more interesting. And it's, you know, it's, I like having these conversations and talking about this subject, because I do see, I roll my eyes a lot at different people, we'll say, who come along and they try and strip that thing out of the creative process. They try and reduce everything down to, oh, it's just, you just have to make sure you do this, and you just have to make sure you do that. Like, it's really no. It's just cerebral. Like, we just need to get more cerebral, and we need to just think about it more, and then you can get these results. We can think our way to having emotional impact. And it's like, no. That's not how it works. Like, and it's weird to me that, you know, we live in this culture that just sort of hates that less rational aspect of being human and of being creative, right? It's like, we're trying to eliminate that factor in these kinds of ways. Not everybody, but I do come across these, you know, voices on YouTube, or even people who've published books that I've read, that I'm just like, you're trying to take the mystery element out of it, or not necessarily the mystery, but the less tangible aspects of it out. Like it's not necessary, you know, that you can just hack and outthink these other things that are very much a part of being human. Like, what is less tangible about that emotional feeling that we get when we get excited about some idea that we have for, like, you know, this character in your script, right? What is not tangible about that? Mm-hmm. There's nothing intangible about that. That feeling is more real than any thought that you, or any just intellectual idea you could have about the same thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's something more real about that emotional response to it. Mm-hmm. But we're so dismissive. We're so easily dismissive of it. And we try to get too clever for our own damn good. Yeah. And so it just, and that kind of shit just drives me nuts, because I think that in my own journey as an artist and as an actor, that was something that wasn't necessarily something conscious that I was doing, but I saw in the way that with a lot of the teachers that I had and, you know, books that I was told to read and stuff, that it was like, wait, hang on a second. We've removed this whole intelligence that we have from the equation here. And that's something we were talking about in our podcast a couple podcasts ago. But this other intelligence that we have that's extraordinarily creative and actually knows way before our heads figured anything out, like which way it needs to go, right? That's so responsive and alive. And we don't listen to it because we've placed too much importance on the rational mind to solve all of the problems. And it's like, no, like in this thing of art and finding the option that does something to you. And again, the mind is a part of that. You know, like the intellect can still go, it's like, okay, well, what are some options? We can try some, what about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? Right? And then that can spark something that sparks this other thing, that this other process that's part of who we are, right? And goes, oh, that's an interesting one. But what if we just did this with it? And it's like, oh, boo. And suddenly, like, we're excited. We found something. We've stumbled into something. And the intellect and the mind is very much a part of that. But it's in service. It always needs to be in service to that other thing.
Yeah, there's something that's coming up, and we've talked a bit about this in other podcasts, but I feel like it's related to this. We talked a lot about technique before, and we've talked about, like, there's a utility to technique, and I do think there is a benefit to understanding techniques, but techniques in and of themselves, they usually fail you when it matters most. They kind of work, and then they kind of don't work. That's how I experienced them. So, like, I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, like, to give an example of a technique, just so you can actually have an example, is like, hey, can you pass me that pointy thing and the smashy thing over there? And it's like, you mean the hammer and the nail? It's like, yeah, the hammer and the nail. So it's like a hammer and a nail are like labels for techniques, but like you're trying to put, like, the idea is I got to get the nail into something, and I'm using the smashy thing, the hammer, to get it in. And techniques are kind of like this, like, I got my nails, I got my hammer, I got my wrench, I got, like, you got it all, but what are you fucking doing with it? like there are all these great tools you can have in your whole, like, and you see these writers sometimes, and I was working with one who was like this, and it was just like, this technique and that technique and whatever, and it was just like, what are we doing with these techniques? Like, how do they get this job done? It's like, that's so fantastic. You have every tool that's available, but I don't need them all. What tool do I need right now? And it's like, oh, like, that's the most simple tool in your box. And it's like, anybody has one of those. It's like, everyone has one because it's the most useful fucking tool. Because like a lot of the time, all you got to do is screw something into the wall or hammer it into the wall. And that's the most important job you'll do. Or you just got to cut something. It's simple. Like don't overcomplicate it. But then it's like these techniques are designed to like do these fancy things. And they're just not necessary for most jobs. Where I find techniques are useful is it's good to have awareness of them and know about them. And then what I find is like you get to a moment where you're like, oh man, I got this problem I'm trying to solve in this story or this script. And I'm going to stick with writing for a moment. And then you remember a technique or a tool you had in your bag. And you're like, I wonder if this tool would be a good one for this job. And it turns out it is, you know, and that's when you kind of pull it out and you're like, oh, let's use this now. And you use it in a very like utilitarian way. But then as you're doing the job, and you get your hands on the job and you know, you start to interact with the tool and you see if the tool or the technique works. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you thought it was the right thing and it wasn't the right thing. You know, it was like, it was off. Like, I don't know. Like, for example, they say with characters, there's essentially all characters fall into four categories. They either are, even, like regular, like they're like a regular even, like there's no like power discrepancy, so to speak. There's no like real like benefit or offset or whatever. They're just kind of, they're like your average person is like your normal, right? Some characters just fall into this realm. Then there's characters that are superior in power. This is like superheroes, stuff like that. People who have this extraordinary kind of strength. And then there's characters who are like underpowered. They're like a Forrest Gump or like a Rocky Balboa type of person. You know, they're lacking something. There's something they don't quite match up. And so they're the underdog character, they call them, right? So I forget what they call the upper one. And then there's one other character type. But anyway, that's a technique and an approach to look at characters in a categorized way and go like, okay, it's like saying I got my screws, I got my nails, I got my tacks, I got my whatever, and they all do a bit of a different job and they're all a little bit different. But how are you going to use them? You know? And so it's like, you're going to build a house with tacks? No, that won't work. It won't have structure. It won't hold up, right? And so it's like a utility. Like you use the stronger thing for certain things because you need it to hold something up. Whereas in other areas, it's like, am I going to put this massive bolt into the wall because I'm hanging a poster on my wall? That makes no sense at all. Why would you do that? That's nonsense. But that's how a lot of writers write. They're like, I'm going to use the most powerful tool to put this poster into the wall. And it's like, first of all, you just made like a 1-inch hole in the wall. It's a poster. Like you could stick it up with gum. It would be fine. And I feel like writing is so much like that. Storytelling, and I'm sure other arts are like this as well. But it's like music. Music's like this all the time. It's like, turn off all the other instruments. Just let one play for a second. That would be great. But then, you know, I've heard lots of musicians say, oh, and then the producer wanted to add in this sound and that sound, and I should have said something. And, you know, I remember Teresa Riley came on and she talked about that in one of her albums. And it's like, yeah, because sometimes we need less. And all these tools you have in your bag don't need to come out of the bag. But the problem is when you get like too focused on the tools, you want to use them all the time. And you're not just focused on, hey, let's just get the job done. And then just getting the job done, I think the other problem is it doesn't feel like it's enough. And that's just insecurity coming out. And really a confident writer, and I dare people to look at this, you'll find a lot of the best stuff ever written, very, very simple. Because confident writers, they use less tools. They almost try to get by without using tools. And that's actually what makes them so great. That's what makes them so admirable. It's like, you got this job done with like almost nothing. Whereas, you know, you look at some of these like blockbuster movies, they have every tool at their disposal and they throw it all at you. And you're just like, this is just noise. It's just lights and garbage and there's no meaning.
Yeah, I mean, Sanford Meisner somewhat famously said, acting is not about the technique, right? And he said that, I think, quite a lot, to my understanding, is to his students. And he wrote it in his book. It was, you know, quite prominent in there for a very good reason, is because he came across a lot of actors who really didn't understand that. And I think you can say that about art, like all artistic mediums, right? Is that it's like, it's not about the technique, right? It's because if you make it about the technique, your work might have a lot of polish, but it will be empty. And that is a pretty, that's not a space you want to wind up as an artist, you know, like it's, and it's easy to see how that happens. Like I'm not unsympathetic to that situation because you start learning techniques and you go, whoa, look at these things that this does. It can, it, you know, there's, it has a, it provides a certain kind of a tangible thing at the end of it. And it's like, hey, that's great. That's great. But know that this is actually about something else. You have these things that you've learned that have kind of opened up your capacity to do certain things. But like you were saying, you might not be required to draw upon some of these things at all. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, only sporadically will you need to get into this thing. Sometimes the thing that, you know, for me, for as far as getting into a character or a role, you know, like, cause I've learned all kinds of techniques as you have and whatever, there's all kinds of things that you can kind of go through, you can examine and explore, and building that understanding of this character and understanding the story. But sometimes it's one specific thing, or it's one thing that you come across that in that exploration that busts the whole thing wide open, right? At which point, sometimes I think it can become almost counterintuitive, but it can work against you to continue analyzing too much, right? Because I think that once you start to really find your way into something, which again is a feeling, emotional, visceral kind of a thing, once you found your way into that thing, that's like, that becomes the thing that now guides you to further exploration and discovery, as opposed to continuing to analyze things. Because I think that can start to actually work against you, right? It can put you too much into your head again, which is not a good place to be as an artist, right? As we've been, I feel like in so many different ways, we've been like beating this point, you know, over and over and over again, where it's like, no, there's the good stuff comes from somewhere else. But this stuff is all important, right? And for whatever reason, what jumped into my mind as you were talking is like Vincent van Gogh, who his style was unlike anything anyone had ever seen. What would have happened if he had just stuck to the technique that he had learned from everyone else, where everything was, you know, focused on like, you know, hyper-realistic, you know, creations of things. I mean, he took all of these things that he learned about working with paint and brush and canvas and color, and he used those things to become the artist that he became, you know, the icon of, because his style was just like, whoa, this is so, again, wild is the word that comes up, wild and just, you know, expressive and unlike anything else, right? But that's because there was something else that he was working from a feeling place with the tools that he had, and he was able to use the tools that he had and use them in a different kind of a way. But it's never about the technique that it was never about the technique, mm-hmm. right? But it's funny because, you know, art students will go and they'll learn about Van Gogh, and yes, certainly you can learn how to paint like Van Gogh. How did he do that? How did he create these types of brush strokes and for these effects? Cool, you've learned that technique, but don't get stuck there either. Mm-hmm. I think that's the problem with technique, is that technique can be, it's so easy to get stuck there, mm-hmm. and it is being stuck.
Yeah. Wow, man. I mean, we've explored some stuff here, and as we were talking, I'm like, what are we talking about? It's one of those, you know, I do feel like there's been through lines in this. I feel like if we come back to the origins of maybe where this came from, you know, I don't think it's relevant, but it doesn't matter what movie, but you saw a movie, you had a great experience at the theater, and you're like, that's why movies are made. And then we started talking about it, and we were all getting lit up. Like, we should have more conversations like this. And I feel like, that's kind of what we're after. We're after that. You know, we're after that. We want to walk out of the theater and we want to be like, wow, it was awesome. Or we want to, you know, look at a painting and be like, wow, that's just like, that hits me somehow. Or listen to a song, you know, when a song, you're just listening to it and you're like, oh yeah, this is great. You know, like that feeling, I mean, we're like, that gives so much richness to life. And then to be a creator who did that for someone, and especially if you were able to do it for a lot of people, I think there's something about that is kind of tied to the artist's journey a little bit. Like, it's somehow I want to invite you into this world. Yeah. I mean, the other thing is like we've been talking about a lot of this stuff. I think, with the tools and techniques, it's like, you can learn how someone did something, but the process that got them to do it, technique doesn't really answer that question. And you have to kind of look inside to begin to find that stuff. And I think that, you know, you might not think you have it, but I would suggest that you probably do, but it's never been given the floor. You talked about this a little earlier about how, like, you create a foundation for something to be born. And I feel like that's why every morning I open up a blank page and I start writing. But I have to open up the blank page to start writing. I have to start somewhere. There has to be something where I can create a foundation for me to put my creativity down. Otherwise, I'm just thinking about it. It's floating and I lose it and it's gone. But when things are written down, I love writing my ideas on the page because it helps me formulate an idea that seems in my head to be sound and structured, but then once it starts getting on the page, then it's not so sound and structured. But because I've been writing for like 25 years or so, it's like I'm pretty good at formulating sound ideas in my head because I've written so much. And they say that writing is learning to think, right? It's actually it's not just learning to think, but it's learning to communicate thought, actually. That's what writing is, right? And to think, but really, I'd say even more so to communicate thought. Oh, and this was the big thing that kind of, before we wrap this up, I wanted to say this and throw it to you, and then you can kind of say what your thoughts are in this conversation. But if I have a vision in my head and I want to paint something, my skill in painting is so weak. I don't know how I would ever bring the vision of my mind onto the, like, it would take me so much work. I need to learn so much about painting and drawing and art in general, about that type of way of doing art. Write a script, fine, like, no problem. But like, or play music or make music, like, I don't know. It's not my skill set. And this is where I feel like there's a certain thing of, you have to learn how to actually use your tools. You have to learn how to use your paintbrush. You have to learn how to play a guitar if that's what you're trying to do. You have to learn how to do this stuff. But then once you gain a proficiency with that, then you can begin to explore. And when you're talking about, you know, Van Gogh, was it? I think you mentioned. Yeah, well, it's like, the only reason why you can break away is because you mastered the skills of artistry. Like, you've mastered how to do realism and you mastered how to do the things. And then you have the skill set, because when you have this picture in your mind, you can actually put it on, you can actually do something with it. And I think that for artists, one of the most frustrating parts of the artist journey, and I think we all experience this, I don't think anybody ever escapes it, is that you have something in your head and you go, oh, this would be so good. And then you go to do it and it doesn't work. And you're like, ah, this is frustrating. And you're like, I know it could, but I don't know how to do it. And like, and that's the part of patience with the artist where you have to like develop the skill, and that takes time. And then you might have this great vision, but you're not going to be able to actually do it until you learn the skills, sometimes tools and techniques, but things that you need to actually get the thing done. So I think you have to look at tools, techniques, skills, and all of that as kind of it's a part of the process, but it's not the end. It's the beginning. That's what I would say. And I would say if you try to use it as the end, it'll always fail you because it's definitely not the end. You'll just make copies of everything else. But if you use it as the beginning, as a launch point or an answer to a problem, I think it's a good thing to begin to acquire and learn and grow with. So man, I don't know, man. I'll tell the beer, then let's wrap this baby up. We'll figure out what we're talking about. Okay. Actually, no, you do the beer. You got it this week.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think we've had this one before, but it's so good, and I love the art on it. And this is from Vancouver Island Brewing, and this is their Mystic Haze Pale Ale. And yeah, it's just like it's just beautiful. I just love the art on this can. Like, it's just so iconically Pacific Northwest colors on here, you know, like it's and the wolf and it's just great. And you know, I love me a hazy pale ale. It's maybe my favorite. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily like this specific beer, but the style, the hazy pale ale, is maybe one of my absolute favorites. And this is it's really good. Really good. It's got like a nice citrusy something to it, and I dig it.
Yeah. Well, man, so look, I as far as wrapping this conversation up, I don't know what we talked about. I think we need to figure that out later. I think that's kind of beautiful, actually, because sometimes I think we end and we go, oh yeah, that's what we led into. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know yet. I actually got to think about this, because for me, it's probably obvious, and maybe to the listener, you're like, guys, you're talking about this. I'm like, fine. But I'm in the middle of it right now. And I'm just like, you know, I feel like a certain amount of passion and connectedness to creativity. I had a great creative morning. Let me throw that into the mix. And then kind of talking about this, and like, it just reaffirms in some ways that like, yeah, like I'm letting the process bear itself. Like, it's all just kind of being born out of its own thing. And like, what I love about a story, once it kind of gets its legs, once it starts going, is it starts to run on its own. It's like a little kid, you know. It's just like, you're like, hey, come back here. Are you trying to keep up with it or something? You know, you're just like, it's just going. It's happening, you know. There's a happening, right? So I think that's exciting. Yeah. And you know, for this conversation, I don't know, man. I mean, I guess I would say that, you can let go of control. If I was going to say anything, you know, if you're walking away from this conversation, what do I take away from that? I just say, like, just take something in your life and try taking your hands off the wheel for a second with it. And like, be like, let's just see what happens when I'm not forcing it to go anywhere. Let's see where it wants to go. And then if it starts to go too much off course, then grab the wheel. But grab the wheel in response to feeling like you're going off course, as opposed to trying to control it onto some course you think it should be on all the time. I think that's a little bit more exciting. And I think when it finds its own kind of, you know, its own kind of balance, when it finds its own kind of tipping point, then you begin to find you're symbiotic with it. Totally out of left field, but I'll throw this in. I love sailing. I've pushed little boats to pretty high extremes. Like, I've tipped them right up to, you know, right up to the edge, and it's exhilarating. Like, you're on the edge of the boat, and the boat is only 4 or 5 or 6 feet wide, but because it's so tipped in the water, you're 6 feet off the water, and you're moving so quick, and the wind's going, and it's like silent, but it's powerful. And when you hit that tipping point where you're holding the wind on a sailboat and the wind is just, but you're like, you could go flying like head first over the other side and the whole boat could tip over, but you're not quite doing that, but you're holding that line. It is exhilarating. And I find when creativity, when you're in the zone, weirdly enough, is a very similar feeling. It's just like, oh, I'm here. It's happening. It's happening. Stay. Don't fall over. And then all of a sudden you get freaked out and you like either you throw the boat over the edge or you just let it drop. Like you pull the sail back and you just fall back down because you're like, I can't, I was going to die, you know, but like, not like that, but it's like in a fun way. Like, and that's, like the zone is a little bit like that. So anyway, I mean, maybe this conversation for me is a little bit about, it's all been a fancy ways of talking about how to get in the zone. So anyway, that's all I got. What do you got?
Well, what was popping into my head is a quote that I can't totally remember, but a lot of people are probably familiar with it. And it's something to the effect of like, we shall journey. And at the end of all of our journeying, we shall come back to the beginning to know it for the first time. And coming back to something you said at the beginning of the podcast about this whole thing of lived in quality. And, you know, I've always thought of that comment as being something as like, oh, you, something you say to name the quality of, you know, like an artistic work. But I'm seeing it in this conversation as also being a quality of the creative process as well. It's got to be lived in. It's got to be lived in, not just thought in, but lived in, which means your entire being and how much we have all of these facilities within ourselves that we ignore and are actually the thing that we need to listen to. And in order so that we can bring that lived in quality to what we do, which means having that response to the work that we do that isn't just rational, but is one that is emotional and even physiological. It's also, don't get me wrong, it is also intellectual as well, because it's like, that's all one process, right? When it all comes together is when that flow thing starts happening, when everything's working together, when everything is in its right place, where we're listening to each one of these, to each of these faculties where they're supposed to be listened to, right? And I think that maybe when I get on my sort of soapbox and start sort of berating the intellect and whatever, it's just simply because we spend so much time there, most of us as it is, that it's like, well, we don't really need to spend too much time talking about that or putting emphasis on this because we're already so familiar with it. We're too familiar with it and we've made it too important, and at the expense and detriment to all of these other things that are informing us, right?
It can also be a bit safe.
It can also be very, yeah, totally. That's exactly the thing, you know. It's, I've said this on here before, but it's worth repeating. It's worth repeating every single time it comes to mind. Another old teacher that I had who used to talk about he would call it the mess and the math, or you could also call it the heart and the head. And basically, he says, you know, like you lead with the heart and the head will clean it up, right? And when it comes to creativity, you've got to lead with that visceral, emotional thing, that the thing that's excited about this thing, that is tapped into the choices that get its juices going, right? That create that actual excitement, or who knows, like that. I mean excitement in a very broad way, because, you know, you could writing a story come across some choice that to for a character or something that happens that brings you to tears. And I would say that's still excitement, right? That's it, because you've excited a part of yourself, of a part of your being that understands the weight of something, the real human weight of whatever this thing is that you're going into and exploring and expressing, right? You've tapped into something that's doing something to you that's out of your control. You're living in it. And that's the way to go. And don't worry, the head's gonna help to clean that up. It's just like, okay, like let's do that. We're gonna go with that, you know, and it might have even helped with saying, like, with throwing out some of the options, you know, but it will be there. It's not going away. And learning how to, you know, in some ways, like the mind is great, and you can maybe correlate mind and technique, I guess, as being sort of adjacent to each other, I suppose. I don't know if that, I hope that makes sense, but it's like they're, you know, you need to have them, right? You need to have those things, but just as, again, as long as you know that it's not about those things, you know, and they're tools to be used in service to something that's, I guess, greater in some respects, especially when it comes to art. So, final comments. I've made a lot of them here. I don't know. I think it's just, it boils down to a long held wisdom within creativity, which is, you know, follow the excitement. You know, that's the thing that's going to best guide you in the creative decisions that you make.
Thank you for listening in on our conversation today. We hope you found something helpful that you can carry forward with you. Head over to our website, wayoftheartist.com, for more free exclusive material and learn about the show. If you haven't already, please support us by subscribing to the show, sharing it with people you know, and keeping compassionate, creative conversation going.